investigating sexual assault cases in nursing homes. Stick around. Hello out there. Welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob. I will be your host for this episode. We're going to be talking about sexual assault in nursing homes. What makes these cases different from other types of nursing home cases? What are the challenges? How do they come about? Who the typical perpetrators are? And we don't do that alone. We have the fantastic Georgia trial lawyer, Casey Gray, on the show to talk to us about these type of cases. But before we get into that, let us do the question of the week. This week, the difficulty level, I would say, is medium. So if you get this right, give yourself 50 points. According to Statista.com, there were how many nursing home residents in Georgia as of 2023? Is it A, 11,380? B, 29,453, or C, 44,439. The answer is B. There were 29,453 residents of long-term care facilities in the state of Georgia as of 2023. And now it's time for the ChatGPT generated joke of the week. Gentle reminder, folks, that this is AI's attempt to blend humor with United States code, so set your phasers to disappointment. All right, Gene, let's cue it up.
The ChatGPT generated nursing home regulation joke of the week.
Skynet.
Regulation 42 USC 483.60.2 says nursing homes need a dietitian or a food boss. It's like, who's in charge of the mushy peas today, Bob, or the nutrition wizard? Finally, someone to blame when the jello's too firm? Who knew Jell-O could be al dente?
And there you go, folks. Once again, proving that the singularity is far away. All right, so let's get into the meat and potatoes of the episode. We are going to welcome onto the show Casey Gray. Casey Gray is a trial attorney at the Helms Law Firm here in the state of Georgia, and they specialize in nursing home abuse cases. Casey Gray specifically is a nationally recognized leader for elder rights. She's a frequent speaker at attorney conferences, teaching how to effectively prosecute nursing home abuse cases. She is a passionate advocate whose practice focuses on nursing home abuse and neglect cases. And I am so happy to have her on today. Casey, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's so funny to be talking to you like this, because I mean, like, usually we're just on the phone blabbering to each other about cases and things like that. This seems to be much more of a formal environment than either of us are used to in our communications. But I thank you for coming on, especially given the topic. So I know that my firm handles sexual assault cases in nursing homes and long-term care facilities, but I find you specifically to be an expert at this. So that's why I wanted you to come on to the show today and talk about this particular breed of cases. We'll just basically take it from the 40,000 foot view, and then we'll just get granular after that. But for you and your experience, and you've handled a lot of these type of cases, what are, for the families of loved ones in nursing homes, what are some of the signs, like the observable signs of a layperson can see of sexual assault that's happened in a nursing home?
A huge thing is just change in behavior. And that's kind of with a lot of trauma, but with sexual assaults, you see a lot more, they're more agitated, they're more fearful of people caring for them. Some actual residents become hypersexual and they start being overtly sexual with people. The big thing is that the behavior changes. You know your loved one. You know if this is normal for them. Even if they have dementia, even if they have like issues where they don't function and can't really, you know, tell you how they're feeling, you know if this is a normal thing for them to start yelling and cursing at staff, or if it's normal for them to start just taking their clothes off or being, you know, making advances at other people. And so the big thing is really watching their behavior. A lot of them get withdrawn and sad. A huge, huge indicator is when they start having issues with people changing their briefs, people being in the bathroom. And it's important to kind of recognize that because at that point, there needs to be some kind of care in place so they don't get triggered by things that have already happened, but also to make sure that you're listening to them, you're letting them communicate. Now, there's the obvious signs, the physical signs, bruises around the genitalia, around the private parts, sores or burns, those kind of things. And those are, more overtly, but most of the time you're not going to see that. You're just going to see uncontrollable crying if they can't really communicate, or you're going to see fear of a certain opposite sex staff member. But usually there's something behind that. And so a lot of times people discount it first off as who would do that? I mean, when you really think about it, no one wants to think about their grandparents having sex to start with, much less someone wanting to sexually abuse them. And so in your mind, you can't fathom that anyone would even find your grandmother sexually desirable, especially these young staff members and things like that. But it happens. It happens a lot. And it's usually caregivers that do it. And so watch them and their interaction. But really, it's just a matter of everyone's a little different and behaviors, appetite decreasing. All of these things are signs something's wrong. And that's where you kind of start.
It's interesting that you say that because I think many people might be under the misapprehension that they would need to be some type of sexually violent expert to understand if something's going on. Like, oh, let me understand bruising around the genitalia. Let me do an observation or whatever. But from what I hear you say, it's really if you know your loved one's baseline, if you know how they behave normally, and then you observe the change in that baseline, the change in behavior, that's going to be oftentimes the indicator to you that something has happened, being withdrawn, being more scared, being more overtly sexual. These things that if they're not on the baseline could indicate something, and you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be, a police officer to understand that something potentially has happened. And I think that's an interesting That's an interesting observation. That's something that's important for us to understand.
I would argue too that you are an expert. You're the expert on your parent or your grandparent or your loved one. Like you know them better than anybody. And so when other people may try to dismiss it or say, oh, well, that's just normal with dementia or that's normal with this type of behavior, it may be some normal in some like circumstances, but you know your loved one. Like you're that expert. You know what when there's something wrong. And so really seeing that change in behavior and then investigating from there, that's really the biggest part. And a lot of times, even people with dementia, they'll tell you in their own way. I've got two cases now where two people with dementia clearly said, this person hurt me and pointed to where they hurt them. They said the name, you match it up with the record. There is someone in that facility with that name, and you have to believe them. Don't dismiss it as dementia. It's important because a lot of people, especially people who aren't demented, who don't have these issues, they're embarrassed and they're mortified and they would never tell. And so a lot of times you're not going to get that disclosure. No one's going to tell. You have to watch and prod and get behavioral health there and have them talk to your loved one and see what's going on. Something happened and the nursing home should be picking up on it and they should be, bringing behavioral health in, and they should be calling you and saying, hey, something's wrong, but they're not going to do it. Oftentimes they dismiss it as a symptom when it was not there before. I will say too, I think it's important, and from what I've read and what I've seen in my records, that change is not going to happen immediately after the assault, right? So same thing with like any kind of PTSD kind of stuff. It takes a little while for it to take. I mean, I usually see in the records I have and some of the reading I've done, usually around a month, 3 weeks to a month, that's when that behavior starts changing after that very first
I
assault.
see. That's an interesting point. Now, you mentioned records. I'm assuming that you're meaning the chart. So, in terms of sexual assault cases that you handle, what types of evidence are you trying to get your hands on to prove your case, or that shows the sexual assault happened, or the ramifications of it are happening? Tell me about that. What are you looking for?
So first and foremost, of course, we get the medical chart, right? But you also want to, you know, you have your expert look at that and tell you, you can read the chart yourself. You can see when they know she was eating 80% of her meals, she was eating, you know, 90% of her meals, she was pleasant, cooperative, and then suddenly everything changes. You can kind of see that shift. But also, it's important because a lot of times they're not going to document what happened. Nursing homes, I don't want to put them all in this branch, but a lot of them are going to ignore it. And so you have to go outside of that. You know, I get the 911 calls for the entire time the resident was at the facility, because that can give you a highlight on how many people are fighting, how many assaults were occurring, how many times they call 911. You know, I go to Georgia MaptiCare and I get all of the complaint investigations. I get all of the deficiencies. I look at that. You go, you know, police departments, you ask for any kind of report from this facility. You specifically ask about this person. If you know or you think you know who assaulted your loved one, then you start doing criminal background checks and you ask the police department to give you any incident reports. And so you just really have to get down and dirty with it. And you have to go to the federal government to get the complaint investigations a lot of times. Look at their fines. If they're fined a lot of money, something bad happened. Sure. And so ProPublica is a great tool to go to, because ProPublica has a website, Nursing Home Inspect, and anyone looking at any kind of nursing homes can go look and see what their worst thing they did the last 3 years were. And so it's honestly, I'm still doing on one case, and you and I were just talking about this. In this case, my client's guardian suspected something was wrong. She knew no one was really believing. And so she started carrying a tape recorder in her pocket. And it's amazing the things that I'm finding. Obviously, you got to look at your laws in your state. You got to look at the rules. But without her and documenting, she emailed. I got all the emails from my client to the administrator. I got body cam footage from the police when they came to investigate once it was reported. It's a huge, long haul, but you should do all that before you even file if you can help it.
I feel like this, what you're describing, is truly the distinction between a sexual assault case in a nursing home and a medical-based situation in a nursing home, like a pressure injury or a fall. Like, there's so much beyond the chart that you need to prove your case.
Because very rarely is it going to be in the chart. And oftentimes, the chart is just going to be wrong. And you will find that it's either covered or it's glossed over, and there are no reports, and there should be incident reports. There should be something to show, hey, this person said someone hurt her or him, and here's when we sent to the state. You're not going to find those. And if you don't go and do your own investigations, I mean, I'm even as far as checking to see, you know, all the assaults there, checking. I mean, even if you post it on social media, it's great. Now you have TikTok, you have Facebook. Get out there and say, hey, has anyone else been hurt here? You know, I think it's important that, you know, as a community, it's a lot harder to hide stuff whenever we all work together, because we want to do the right thing and we think justice should, you know, be served on these people. And put it out there, you know, ask for help from other people, you know, and especially talk to residents. If you know some residents from the facility or prior staff, people who were there when your loved one was there but are now gone, they are a gem of information, because most of them, the good ones, and most of them are good people. They hated what was happening and they couldn't talk about it because they're threatened. Their jobs in line, their health insurance is in line. But when they leave, they'll tell you more.
You know, I'm listening.
Yeah. I mean, it really is just a matter of playing detective. But now for people who, you know, aren't lawyers and aren't trying to build a case, they're really just trying to like, say, hey, my mom was assaulted and I want something done about it. You know, just talk to your mom, ask her if anyone else knew, you know, ask questions, demand that they get a sexual assault nurse in there to talk to her, demand a rape kit, because these things are supposed to happen. The regulations and laws require them to do it, but they don't. And so you have to be an advocate and just demand, send my mother to the hospital, get a sane nurse. You do not interview her. You don't talk to her about it. You don't talk to my dad. I want a sane nurse. And that sane nurse is a sexual assault nurse. They're the experts and they know how to speak to people, because if you let the nursing home nurses with no training do this, Oftentimes, it not only does it embarrass your loved one or make them scared to report, but it also clouds the facts and it makes it a lot harder to finally find out what really happened.
Tell me about the concept of injury or damages in a sexual assault case in a nursing home case, because it seems to me that a lot of the defense to these cases is we can never know how this alleged assault affected the resident because of cognitive impairment, because they passed away, et cetera. Like, how do you approach that?
But you can because you look at the facts. In the case I have, my client was sexually assaulted. Within the next 6 months, she lost 40 pounds with no explanation. You see quickly that these, they decline. They become more withdrawn. They become more isolated. And when people isolate themselves and become more depressed and become more withdrawn, they're not fighting to get better. They're not fighting to heal from infections. And you'll see it's a lot harder for them to survive for a longer period of time. There are so many instances where, even if they aren't suicidal, although a lot of them are, their physical well-being is injured. But it's not just that. One of the biggest things about nursing homes that they're required to do, and I think if anyone should have this dignity and this quality of life, it is our parents and our grandparents. They put the work in, they put the time in, and you've taken their last few years and you've made them miserable because all they have is a memory of someone violating them, hurting them. And you think about anyone who's been sexually assaulted, that sticks with you. And it's a lot harder, especially for people from a generation that we're not from, the boomers and the silent generation. They don't talk about these things. They don't talk about sex. And so they live with this themselves, and you ruin their next few years if they even make it that long.
So, you had talked about a resident representative recording conversations, and again, obviously understand what the laws are in your state. But what are some other things that you mentioned? Maybe getting demanding a sex assault nurse. What are some ways that the family can get involved if sexual conduct, inappropriate sexual conduct or sexual assault has taken place?
Well, first, just to stick with the recording, I think everyone should petition their government to allow nanny cams in nursing homes. That would save so many elderly people so much shame and heartbreak and neglect. There are very few states that do it, but the things it could save and, a perfect example, we don't know what happened in that room, but if there was a camera and you were allowed to put it in there, we would. Mike Prieto had a case where a war veteran was neglected. The records showed they did everything right, but the family had a camera, and that camera showed that they treat him horribly and let him die in his last few moments.
Yeah,
And
I'm actually petitioning to get him on the podcast to talk about that case.
yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I mean, but it's so, petition and lobby your government, write letters. It really kind of starts. And even, at a home base, go to the nursing home, write the owners, start a petition, go online, social media, TikTok, Facebook, whatever you use, and, demand that these nursing homes, not if they're not going to allow you to put your own nanny cam in there, then every room, somehow, you need to be able to see what happens. And I know there are issues with privacy, but the health and safety of our elderly and our loved ones are so much more important. Obviously, if they are cognitive and can, they need to consent. But, the biggest problem is a lot of the people in the nursing homes who get sexually assaulted are those who don't have the cognitive ability to say no. Sometimes you even find that they actually believe that the staff member, this person loves them and they're in a relationship, and it's horrible abuse and it's a crime. But no, but they're not prosecuted. And that just goes back to the other thing that relatives can do is keep up with the police, fight with them, tell them you want something done. Do not just trust that they're going to file the case. And it's not, I'm not talking about police. Everyone, it's a hard subject. No one's really adequately trained on it. And so officers don't really know how to investigate it, especially with someone with dementia. You have nursing home nurses who have no idea what to do with it. And so people just don't know what to do. you have to stick with it and keep being the voice for your loved one.
I think it's interesting what you said about it's almost it's like crowdsourcing the knowledge, meaning going on TikTok or Instagram and saying, "Hey, this has happened. Has this happened to anybody else?" I guess my only asterisk to that would be to make sure that whatever you say is truthful, or you have evidence to support it. Otherwise, you might get in trouble. But I guess I hadn't thought about that.
Well, you don't have to say what happened. I mean, you literally can go and say, so I've heard some things. Did anything happen to anyone at this facility? You don't have to
Right.
name names and say what someone did. It literally is a question. And I do think the more we talk about it and the more we put it out there and the more accountability we make these nursing homes have, the better it's going to get because they're going to start holding their staff accountable.
Exactly. Okay, so in your experience, and does this have an impact on the case? But who predominantly is it the caregiver, or is it predominantly in your experience other residents that are doing the assault?
80% of assaults are by caregivers, and 70% of those are in nursing homes.
I see. So I mean, it's almost
Right now, what I have is an equal mix, but there's usually, I have a case where a resident was first assaulted by another resident, received no counseling, no treatment, no trauma-informed care. And it was almost put up like, oh, well, she has a brain injury and she has dementia, so she didn't feel it. That's just not true. And then later on, she became the perfect victim for a staff member who honestly still has his license and has not been held accountable. So hopefully that'll happen soon.
Wow. Okay. Well, Casey, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge with us. This has been absolutely fantastic. And again, it's weird for me to be talking to you with the suit on, with questions and such, because we usually were, gossiping or spreading rumors about things we probably shouldn't. But
Oh,
anyway,
yeah.
thanks so much.
Or I'm on a soapbox complaining about something. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for having me on, Rob. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, folks, I hope that you enjoyed this particular episode. If you want to get in touch with Casey Gray over at the Helms Law Firm, you can email her at caseygray@helmslaw.com or pick up the phone, call 912-289-0655. Again, 912-289-0655. New episodes of the Nursing Home Movies podcast come out every week. If you have a suggestion for something that you want me to talk about or a guest that you would like to hear from, please be sure to let me know. And with that, folks, we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal or medical advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes for now are available every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.